Good morning once again, and welcome to The Other Side of Midnight. I'm your host, Richard C. Oakland. We have a really intriguing show this morning. There's a gorgeous gibbous moon hanging out tonight in the sky over the Land of Enchantment, but we're going to be going a little bit further. We're going to be going to Mars. And I have two guests. They're going to be accompanying me and you as we go to Mars. But before we get to them, I want to pick up on last night's show, because I kind of abrogated Hailing Frequencies, and I went, you know, with Dave Disler for the entire show, because frankly, David is the key to our taking back control of our space program. I got a lot of interesting email from some quarters last night, including people who were telling me in their emails that they represented, you know, Air Force and Navy and NASA folks, and there were all kinds of major developments with thrusters based on the EM drive principle, capable of 100 pounds of thrust here or 1,000 pounds of thrust there, all in these secret black ops programs. And I frankly don't know whether or not that's true. And even if it is true, there's nothing we can do about it because no supporting data can be supplied because it's all classified. And what I said to these people is, you know, be that as it may, our support, our public support for Dave and his work is based on two things. One is he's a real engineer doing real engineering, real science. He's got real results. If you carefully look at those videos, which I know for most of you are not exactly like, you know, Doctor Who, but they're important, so I would urge you to click on last night's page and go through them. The second important reason why Disler is critical is because it's not locked under black ops. It's not locked away under classification or intelligence or technologies that cannot be made public. It's in the open public domain. The more we support Dave, and the more results he can achieve, the quicker that this will be propelled into the mainstream, because you realize that NASA can't just stand by if a private effort outside of it separately creates a technology which actually can be ferried into space by Elon Musk and take us somewhere, like Mars. So tonight, before you do anything else, I want you to click on Radio with Pictures. Remember, you go to othersideofmidnight.com. You then click on tonight's guests. That takes you to the page for tonight. And at the top, there's Radio with Pictures, and we've got a lot of links. We've got six links, and we've got a whole bunch of images we're going to be going through. I want you to look down at link number six, where it says Support Dave Disler's Enterprise Project. Because if you fund him, if you donate to him, and I read some emails last night, one gal has sent $50. I had an email today. In fact, let me go and find the email I got today, excuse me, which was really an important email, because it kind of communicated a level of commitment that I think is kind of really important for this. And of course, when I go to look for my email, I'm not seeing the one that I had bookmarked, so maybe it's not available. Anyway, this is a guy who wrote to me. He's on SSI, Social Security. He's sending Dave $10. He only gets a few hundred dollars a month to live on, literally to live on. And he's taking 10 priceless dollars of that small sum and sending it to Dave Disler because he can see what this means, what David is doing, what all of us can share in, what we can have a participatory role. I mean, that's one of the kind of perks of being a part of Club 19.5. Because you get to support some extraordinary stuff that otherwise you wouldn't have a chance to support. So, with that as background, let me talk about a couple other things. We're ending the week with Mars, as we began the week with Mars. Remember, we began the week with NASA announcing, surprise, surprise, we found flowing water on Mars. And of course, as I hopefully pointed out throughout the week, this is not exactly new news. In fact, if you go to the first link under Radio with Pictures, you'll see a paper, the Mars title paper that I co-authored with Mike Barra all those years ago, back in 2000, 2001, which lays out not only why water on Mars is interesting and vital, but why its distribution, as later discovered by Jill England and Efren Palermo, is critical to understanding Mars' ancient history. The water on Mars, according to their paper, which they wrote in 2000, is distributed in two locations on the Martian surface, located exactly 180 degrees apart. And what I said was that this water that we're seeing in the NASA data, if in fact their global maps of where the water is located match the maps that England and Palermo put together 15 years ago, then we're in for a very interesting time, because I want to hear from mainstream planetary scientists their explanation for this extraordinary bimodal distribution. Bimodal distribution simply means that you've got two peaks. The water peaks here, and then if you go 180 degrees around the planet, it peaks there. Why would you have a distribution of water on Mars which is clustered in two locations around the equator on exactly the opposite sides of the planet? Well, in this paper, number one of our links tonight, I go to great lengths to explain that that, in fact, only can occur if Mars used to be in a tidal lock situation, meaning it was not freely orbiting the Sun as it is now, but as Tom Van Flandern had proposed many years ago based on completely separate data, Mars used to be a moon, used to be a satellite of the now long-gone Planet 5, which for some reason, about 65 million years ago, according to this convergent data, literally was blown to kingdom come. And the fragments and the pieces and the shrapnel and the trillions and trillions and trillions of tons of dust, micron-sized dust, wreaked havoc in the rest of the solar system. So much havoc that all of the structures, all of the artifacts, all of the ruins that we have been charting over the last 30-some years are in incredibly terrible condition. Because on airless worlds, on airless moons, if there were structures or ruins or artifacts, they would have been smashed to bits and basically ignited because of the incredible velocity of impacting material. And each tiny impacting micron-sized fragment at several miles per second is like a tiny, tiny stick of dynamite. So it blows things up, it erodes, it blasts away. Imagine subjecting materials to that kind of onslaught for millions and millions of years. It's actually a wonder that there's anything left for us to find. The one place where we have found really amazing stuff in pretty pristine condition is, of course, now on Pluto, which is orbiting 17 degrees above and below the central plane of the solar system. So in our model, prescinding off Tom Van Flandern's ideas, it was basically for most of its lifetime, and we don't know how long it had been there, but it has been orbiting above or below this collection of dust in the plane of the solar system, and thereby escaping the most incredible ravages of the erosion that that kind of dust streaking in at miles per second can accomplish. Which leads us back to the inner solar system, to the planet Mars, the planet for me which started all of this, the planet we're going to be exploring tonight through the minds and inquiries and perceptions and questions of two people, two guests, Will Farrer and Alan Sturm. Their bios are on the main page, on the guest page at the other side of midnight. Will, as you know, has been a guest here a couple, three times now. He's been looking at these things, prescinding from his own background as information technology director for a national healthcare company. So he's familiar with technology, and he's been involved with space anomalies. He's got a couple of websites, YouTube channel, the What's Up in the Sky 37. His website is whatsupinthesky.com. And then Alan Sturm, who, as we also talked with him earlier in the month, began working on a coffee table book looking at anomalies on the moon. And, of course, once you get looking at anomalies, you keep looking, you keep looking, you keep looking, you find more. The advantage that Alan has is he actually has a degree in architectural design, in architectural engineering, so he brings a level of expertise and an educated eye to these kinds of studies that many other people do not. So without further ado, let me welcome to the other side of midnight Will Farrer and Alan Sturm. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Richard. Thank you for having us on.
Well, as my grandmother used to say, it's nice to be had.
Well, we're excited. I know I've been talking to Alan all day. He started off today telling me that he wasn't a Mars guy per se, but more of a lunar guy. But after our swapping pictures all day, I think we might have turned him into a little bit of a Mars guy. So
let me stop you there, Alan.
Yes.
The principles of finding architecture or regular machinery or geometry that's created by intelligent beings is not indigenous to any one planet. It's that those principles apply to anything. If I look at a random field of rocks taken, you know, let's say we fly an airplane over the Mojave Desert and we take a photograph out the window. I can look at that photograph and I will try to ignore the fact that we know there's intelligent life on Earth, and I can look at the data in the photograph and I can tell pretty quickly whether there's something artificial down there or it's just, you know, mesas and eroded canyons and desert and scrub and all that.
Right, right. You know what's even more interesting in this thought is that we think in terms of form follows function, which is a 20th century concept. And that 20th century concept has driven us to design such things as a refrigerator to look the way that it looks because of the crossroads of production and cost against design. And so what's even more interesting, and I don't think a lot of people understand, is that when we're looking at potentially entirely different cultures that aren't even human related, mm-hmm. we have to look strictly at the geometry against the terrain, because our eyes could easily glance over something that we wouldn't recognize. Take for instance, a multimillionaire could have a refrigerator that looked like an ape. Mm-hmm. And we would never, and it just looked like a big stuffed animal to us in the room.
Well, actually,
we would never think to go over there to open it up and it's a refrigerator, because to them it didn't cost any more to do that.
Actually, Alan, when I was invited to visit Alan, and Andy Warhol for the first time, he had a refrigerator that looked like an ape, and he had a bunch of other very strange furniture.
Yeah,
and that's
part of this oddity, you know, that I've always this roadblock that I've always had with a lot of other people, which was if I would show them things and their first thought is, well, what is it? Because they're thinking, well, what is it based on the things that we would have made?
See, this is probably the most important impression you left with the audience the first time you were a guest here, which is you have to completely divorce what you're seeing from what you're used to seeing.
Absolutely.
And you have to reduce it to stark geometry. Mm-hmm. And that kind of geometry is not redolent in nature, going back to Carl Sagan's famous quote, you know, intelligent life on Earth first manifests itself in the geometric regularity of its constructions. Mm-hmm. So you have to learn to abstract. And most people walking around, you know, looking at their iPhones, falling off curbs, falling into ponds because they're looking at their iPhones, they don't know that you have to abstract and not try to identify, oh, that's a 1957 Chevy. No, you're not going to see something you recognize. You'll see something that is vaguely familiar, but you got to reduce it to the stark, plain geometry.
Yeah, yeah. And it's pretty sad, too, because if it was like – if somebody claimed that they saw, you know, Miley Cyrus's face on Mars, they would have a million hits instantly.
Of course.
Or President Obama's face on Mars. There's a channel out there now that does that. They put those things out, and they're getting millions of hits. It's sad because – it really does take away from the hits of people who work like with the groups I work in, who really do put in the time and look through these images, you know, and we really fight to get the tens of thousands of hits that we do get. It's funny, one of those just Obama's head on Mars, and that's what it was, and it must have probably 3 or 4 million hits, and
amazing.
It keeps getting run. And what happens is every time it comes up, every time one of our really decent anomalies makes like halfway decent news or a good newspaper online or actually make it to TV, they always link Obama's head, One of mine was a coffin on Mars, which was just a box that I'd fallen into the trap of the person who emailed me said, it looks like a coffin on Mars. Well, I put that in there, and all of a sudden,
rookie mistake.
Coffin on Mars, and it was a box. It looked like a box.
But see, a box is a box is a box. You don't know what's in it. You don't have to know what's in it. A box on Mars cannot exist.
Exactly.
Particularly multiple boxes. That when we go through the images in a little while, we're going to see things that are so incredibly shaped. They look like blocks that had fallen off the Great Pyramid or something. Yeah. That is an anomaly that deserves to have attention. But if you were to say, you know, block fallen off Martian pyramid, no, that's a step too far because, frankly, I don't see any pyramids around that it could have fallen off. They're probably under the sand. But again, you have to take it as just as far as is necessary to get people to pay attention. And frankly, I think all these, you know, dinosaurs and iguanas and all the other animals that the Curiosity team has been kind of highlighting, I think the JPL is putting them in the images deliberately.
And they very well could be. That doesn't surprise me at all. I've said that many times, and I get a lot of comments on my YouTube channel saying that. What I was getting at was they keep putting in when the articles come out at the bottom of the article, even when it's a good anomaly or something good out there, they always put the bad stuff with it just so the reader always gets that last taste of that nastiness in their mouth. Oh, well, that's just all fake.
It's called disinformation. See, we are winning. You know, when I started this way back when, we will not mention how long ago, it was very lonely. There was nobody else looking. You know, there was DiPietro, Molinar, and me. That was it. And those guys kind of moved out of the field because I guess they felt there wasn't much more that they could do given the limitations of, you know, they were contractors to NASA and they worked for major aerospace companies, and I guess maybe some of the people they worked for frowned at their extracurricular off-hours activities. But we've kept going, and I've watched with great interest as the web and as social media have grown and blossomed. There's more and more people, more and more groups all looking at stuff. And the counterweight, the counterforce from inside has been to put out all this crazy, stupid, idiotic stuff to basically drown the signal in the noise.
Dilute it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's where we try to come up with our groups that, and weed out a lot of that. There's so many people posting in our groups, and what we'll do is we'll just kind of weed through the bad stuff because a lot of people are just starting this out. They have no Photoshop experience. They've got no really – they're just as interested as – and when I was a child and I – heard you, Richard, and I said, whoa, this is cool. I've got to get online, check this out. This was, you know, when Enterprise Mission was just the wee old website way back in the day when I first started looking into it. Mm-hmm. And J.P. Skipper had a really small website after this. So this had been a long – I know you had been doing it for another 10, 20 years because I was finding stuff from you that looked like it was on Betamax videotapes. It was pretty great. And now, so we try and weed that out just because you're right. It's muddying up the field. And I just did a conference with a couple of my friends talking about this same thing because it's so much out there now and everybody's excited, which we're exploring a whole other planet. We don't have to go anywhere. It's amazing. So I've been trying to keep myself away from that as much. I used to do – I always say my motto is before every video, I see what I see and you see what you see because I've got a different background than you do. You've got a different background than I have. But I've really tried to stop saying – that looks like a cog, but, you know, who knows what that is. You know, it's geometry, and I'm going to have to keep remembering that as I move forward.
Everybody, look, we probably should do an online course, how to find real anomalies and check out the real stuff from the fake stuff. Because there is no college course you can take in this. We're basically founding the field of extraterrestrial archaeology as we go. And every field has to have, you know, a textbook, a kind of a rule book, a rule of thumb. You do this, you do that, you don't do that. So, yeah, but all right. So let me leap ahead now. You guys have been on the phone all day having this conversation. Do you want to clue us in as to what you were talking about?
No way.
Oh, okay. Well, folks, I'm really glad to have had my guest this morning. I guess the rest of the show we're going to be talking by ourselves.
No. We were just we hadn't ever talked. You know, we were on that. I jumped in on that round table the other night, and that's the first time I heard Will's voice. And so we were just catching up, and I had to admit from the beginning. I said, speaking of how long you've been into this, and when I remember hearing you back in the 90s, is that, I left Mars a long time ago because there was just, you seem to like set the standard for the research level, the amount of effort put into attempting to define and observe everything that you could about this topic. And after that, I saw a lot of people throwing a lot of stuff up there that was just silly, and I left it, and I went back to the moon. And that's how I got into this. So when I was chatting with Will earlier today, I had to admit to him, I said, I haven't even been checking out the moon. Tonight was the first time that I even checked out a handful of videos YouTube.
Did you hear the news today that NASA has put all of the Apollo imagery on Flickr?
Really? No.
People sent me links all day. Even one of my trusted associates sent me a link tonight. Did you know that NASA has published something like 8,500 Hasselblad images from the surface of the moon taken by the astronauts? So my first response email was, well, compare them to some of the stuff that we've shown you and tell me if the quality is, because I had no time to look because I was preparing for the show. And over the weekend, of course, I'll have some time now to go look. But if NASA is actually dumping 8,500 Hasselblad images, really high-resolution, high-quality images, on the web, a lot more people are going to be joining this club.
I want to know if those are – did you say from the surface or of the surface?
From the surface. The Hasselblads were taken – most of them were taken from the surface. I mean, they did take some Hasselblads from orbit through the windows, but – the primary orbital cameras were the mapping cameras and the pan cams. Yeah. And so the Hasselblads really were, the film in those chest-mounted Hasselblad cameras on the astronaut spacesuits.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. And there seems to be this, this buildup of, this just seems to go hand in hand with that lead scientist over there at NASA saying that they'll have definitive proof of alien life in 20 years. Mm. It seems like they're just backfilling every channel possible.
Well, I think it's going to be a lot sooner than 20 years. And remember, NASA said that in Brookings back in 1959. Remember, Brookings said, we will not likely discover intelligent life beyond the Earth for the next 20 years. I'm paraphrasing. And when I read that, I thought, wait a minute. How do they know 20 years?
They're set the timetable.
Or it's a rounded up number from 19.5. Remember, this is NASA's magic number. I mean, if they said 19 and a half years, somebody besides us would have noticed that, hey, guys, how can you be that specific? But if you say 20 years is a generation, 20 years is... well, for some congressmen, it's 10 terms. 20 years is a nice round number.
Well, what was that? What was that sci-fi book that the other species came and they were hovering in the sky and they would never show themselves for X number of generations?
Oh my God! You mean Childhood's End?
Yeah.
That's Arthur Clarke's fabled classic Childhood's End, which, as I announced a few weeks ago, is going to be on the Sci-Fi Channel for 3 or 4 nights consecutive. In December.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to have some stunning Christmas presents around December because the trend curve of the NASA revelations, and I'm really glad you guys are seeing what I'm seeing because I'm seeing drip, 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 and of course Monday it became literal, accelerating, speeding up. It's like they have a clock, they have a calendar, they have a timetable of disclosure, and they're trying to meet the timetable without telling us what's at the end.
For that very reason, when I was asked to pick out some anomalies for tonight, I picked recent photos because the recent photos are amazing. They're putting out images that are crystal clear almost.
There's no JPEG artifacts. They're properly color balanced. They're not fuzzy. Gosh,
in your face.
Yeah, and right. Again, my model is this is political cover your ass. And I don't know whether I can say that on the radio because we're being carried by a lot of affiliates, so maybe I'm now off the air on those affiliates. Well, the FCC will come and bang on my door tomorrow morning. But yeah, it's basically a COIA operation, and this is my logic. If you knew from whatever sources that disclosure is coming, that at some particular point everything you have done vis-a-vis exploring the solar system would be going to be scrutinized by cynical, slant-eyed reporters who only are digging for the story, right? And because the story is now official, NASA says there's artifacts in the solar system, there's a lot of reporters going to be turned loose on all these archives, right? So those of us who might claim, well, wait a minute, NASA's been hiding all this stuff for decades. If the reporters go independently to the archives and they start seeing real clear images of artifacts, they'll look at us and say, are you guys nuts? NASA's been totally honest. There's the stuff. And of course, what are we going to say? Oh, but it was only yesterday they put it up. No one's going to follow that trail.
Well, there's an old saying, evolution over revolution, you know? It's like maybe they are, you know, just kind of feeding it to us as fast as they think we can.
Well, I think it's insurance. I think they're building up the data bank so that when the mainstream reporters, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, whatever, start looking. Remember, we've had a very nice positive story this week in Newsweek. When was the last time you saw us get any positive, serious press in a mainstream publication on this subject? Never. Never.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Now, I must caveat that. I have to caveat that with one exception. When Brian De Palma came out with Mission to Mars, as we were discussing the other night, there was a very nice story on me in Time magazine. So now I've got the big two. I've got Time, I've got Newsweek. I guess, you know, what's the third one that they could put me on the... If they put me on the cover, I wouldn't mind. I sound like Donald Trump. Oh, my God, I got to stop watching Trump on television. Ah!
Started to talk like him.
So we're... I'll tell you what, we've got about 3 minutes till at the break at the bottom of the hour. What do we want to do to set up the audience for what we're going to do after we come back?
When we come back, I think I'd like to take... You guys did the liquid on Mars. If we can go to one of my pages when we come back, and I want to talk just a little bit about Curiosity and what we've seen with these flows. We've been finding them a couple places on Mars. I put about three of them up on a page I wanted to show you guys.
Okay, so what link should we be clicking on?
If you guys get ready, click on link three. It's going to be NASA. Yeah, okay. From radio with pictures. Everybody go back to the other side of Midnight page. And if you're looking for them, make sure you click the title of our Friday, October 2nd Mars special. And it'll bring you to the radio with pictures button. And go ahead and you click on the link three, NASA missed chance sample possible.
Oh, my God, Will. Look at that.
They drove right by this
stuff.
Look
at that.
They drove right by it, and I begged. I emailed every major show.
That's got to be a water stain. In fact, I see two, and they may be recurrent because I see evidence of faint hints of previous flows.
They're definitely recurring. You can see the previous flows. That might even been a wet one right there. And then they took that sample and put it all over. They took that dry sample, that 0.02, and made it such big news across everything. There's 0.02% water on Mars, and this, and if we could have just, that liquid could be anything. It could be water, could be some form, but it looks almost wet in these pictures, and I'd like to take a look at this when we come back.
It looks like if you were to put your hand in it, you could pick it up and there'd be sand clumped in the palm of your hand. Okay,
absolutely.
Hold it there, gentlemen. We're at the bottom of the hour. My guest this morning, Will Farrer and Alan Sturm, we're discussing Mars. The developments, the water, the images, the artifacts. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return. And we are back on the other side of midnight. My guests this morning, Will Farrer and Alan Sturm, are discussing artifacts and amazing phenomena on Mars. And we had just clicked on Will's website, What's Up in the Sky, with the link is number 3 and on the Radio with Pictures and on the other side of midnight. And I'm looking at this first Curiosity image, image number 1. That's got to be water.
It's amazing. And what got me, what was really interesting, I watched that press conference the other day. I even took a vacation day from work to watch
Now
it.
That's dedication, Will. I used to play hooky from school. My teachers hated me, and I would simply say, do you think John Glenn's going to go up again? And they had nothing to say. I mean, I hit him with history, and they had to stop.
It was use it or lose it time, so it's time to use it. And this was something that I was excited about. They get you excited. When I saw the water flows, we had been recognizing those high-rise flows in our groups for a very long time. The United Family of Anomaly Hunters, mm-hmm. We've got all this stuff covered, and we will definitely help you put out a video on how to do proper anomaly hunting if you want to help us with it, because everybody there loves you. And here we go. So basically, they were having this press conference, and after it was all over, and we had already seen a lot of these pictures, and the people actually that were in the press conference tipped us off to what they were going to say. When these pictures that came out, and if you click on where you've got image 1 here and you see the flow, if you click on the actual NASA image there, mm-hmm. it brings up the full image, and you can see.
Oh, look at that. Okay.
Check it out. It's where the rocks come all together, and yeah. it's like it's just a little spring that comes up.
Yeah.
And the lady had asked them, is there any way that Curiosity rover could go to any of these sites? And of course not. Curiosity rover is not going to make it halfway, another 200 miles across the surface to make it to some of these flows that they found.
You mean some of the flows they found on the orbital imagery?
Yes, exactly. And then she said, well, how about the 2020 rover? Would you guys be able to do that? And they said, well, possibly, I think was the answer. And the whole time I was smacking my fist down saying, I emailed, I tried to call, I got no response. When this was a saw, the 712, they took a lot of pictures here, so they had to have seen it. And it doesn't
Hang on. We don't know what they actually are doing with this mission. We really don't. If you go back to Radio with Pictures and you click on, let's see if I can do this quickly. If you click on link number 2, the real agenda of NASA's Curiosity rover mission, that's the one that I termed the "it only takes one white crow." What I try to set up in this paper that we published on Enterprise a couple of years ago is that the Curiosity mission, I mean, it kind of reminds me of one of those lines from the from Star Trek, where the two sisters kind of get Geordi, they put some kind of a bugging device in his visor so they can read what's going on in engineering. And he's wandering around through the ship, goes here, goes there, and one of the sisters turns to the other and says, he must be the only engineer in Starfleet that never goes near engineering. Well, Curiosity is got to be the only Curiosity rover that never exhibits any curiosity.
Wonderful name for it. Because I would have – they were there at this all for a while. They should have taken – especially because of the fact that they had already taken soil samples, plenty, and said, 0.02, they came out. It was big news. And this one, they took plenty of pictures that day. Somebody at JPL had to have seen it or NASA. They had to have seen this.
How can you not see it?
And it's even to where, like, if you're – I'm looking at the actual NASA version now. The one on the site, I've tweaked a little bit. But even on the NASA version, you can still see the other flows.
It's crystal clear. You don't need any enhancement. Now, again, for people that need to follow this on their digital device, if you're hanging out in Hong Kong tonight and you're looking at us on – or this morning, actually, over there, on your iPhone, go to othersideofmidnight.com. Go to the guest page tonight. You click on the first link on that splash page. That takes you to the guest page for tonight, Mars Special. Go under Radio with Pictures, and you'll see this amazing link. If you click on number 3, Will's website, and look at the first image on Will's website, and then you click on that image, that takes you to the raw NASA image, which he composed the close-up that is on his page. And there's no way they could have missed this. No way.
They couldn't have missed it. It was clear as day, and it was in a couple of the images as they drove by. And there's some interesting, you know, actual architecture in here too. Over the right, the block looks like it's been smashed open.
Mm-hmm.
But that right here has it. Even in the middle, you can see the same type of where it's so blatant where the water's flowing down. And I shouldn't say water. The liquid looking, because so, it could be oil coming out of there.
Nah. That was an early idea that I had that I wanted to put out there to give Tommy Gold some credit. But this has got to be water. For one thing, it's too ubiquitous. For another thing, in terms of scale, remember, we're looking at a little tiny flow here that may be, what, 3 feet, 4 feet long, something like that? The ones we see from orbit are hundreds of feet long, but they have exactly the same shape. Now, you can't tell me that the surface properties, and some of the critics say, oh, that's just a dust avalanche. Yeah, right.
No way.
Dust avalanches do not... Have you actually seen an avalanche? They spread out like a fan as they go down the slope because the little particles are not connected to each other, so they kind of float in the air and they spread out like a fan, whereas if you have a water seep in a soil of sand or dust, it basically stays close to the same channel until it's all absorbed, which is what we see here.
I live 15 minutes from Ocean City, Maryland, and I'm on the beach all the time. I'm in Assateague Island, and this is the exact same look you get from sand. Like you said earlier, right before the break, like you could pick it up, and it would be in your hands,
moist,
solid.
Clumping together, little grains falling off. God, it makes you really want to be able to go there, doesn't it? That's why that's why we have to fund Dave Dissler, because we could have our own space mission to go to Mars, regardless of anybody else, if his work progresses the way it's progressing.
Hey, so just right of center, notice that little peninsula-looking little caked. That's very telling right there. That requires that sand, or that, let's call it sand, to have a surface.
Oh, that
touching
little, it looks like kind of a tongue.
Yeah. And notice there's a dark spot underneath it, right?
Yep.
And so there's a difference in the moisture content there, regardless if it's frozen water or anything. There's something liquid there that seems to be clumping something up. And then whatever the temperature variances on the surface are creating, the difference between the base surface and whatever there is on top is creating that extra layer on, you know, like a crust.
Hmm.
You know, and you can see other areas on the left. Just left of the big long thing, there's another little spot right there, like Will was talking about on the sand on the beach, you know, where that chunk is sliding out, which is also interesting because what would be causing that? Is that really a steep hill? I can't quite tell from this angle.
It looks like it's a hill because if you look beyond, see the rocks on the top?
Yeah.
And then you look beyond, you're obviously looking kilometers away. This is a ridge that's relatively close to the rover. And then that stuff in the background is probably miles away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this all looks like it had once been underwater. The on the right side of the image, up near the top, there's almost this brain-looking rock.
Oh, yeah, I can see it.
I see that.
Right,
you know,
there, end.
That looks like... that looks like erosion from lots of water.
Unless it's coral.
Yeah,
it looks like brain coral.
Yeah.
And remember, NASA has found and then ground to dust a crinoid on the other side of Mars, over where Spirit and Opportunity – was it Spirit or Opportunity? I forget which one ground the – I think it was Opportunity ground the –
the barnacle?
No, I'm sorry. It was Spirit.
It
ground the crinoid to dust.
Mm. And soon after, fell off the face of Mars.
Yep.
We lost
yep.
communication.
So now what I find interesting about this photo, though, is that right dead center from the little cakey, crusty thing that I was pointing out, there's a lot of slide going in around those rocks. You know, so it does look like it's on a pretty steep angle.
Mm.
And then there's I once heard, and Richard, you can probably correct me on this, I once heard that the equivalent wind up there is like 300 miles an hour, but it's so thin that it's we would feel it like a breeze. And I'm wondering what would cause, just down here at the bottom of the image, that flow going to the right, because the left looks like it's sloping away and to the left.
Mm-hmm.
What would cause all that not coming down the hill but going completely horizontal to the right? That's just...
Well, it could be wind drifts. Now, remember, the numbers we're quoting about winds and atmospheric pressure and all that all come from NASA.
Yeah.
If NASA, and I said this the other night to somebody, and they kind of threw a hissy fit. Oh, come on. They wouldn't lie about that. Look, if they'll lie about this, they'll lie about anything. If the name of the game has been to keep us, you know, dark and happy, you know, like mushrooms, and you know what you feed mushrooms in the basement, then there's nothing they wouldn't lie about. Nothing.
If they would drive by this and not sample it or not bring this out to the newspapers, and they should have had this with the pictures of the huge size. Like I said, this is within the rover's arm. The rover's got a beautiful arm with the scoop. We could have gotten a sample of it. They could have shot the laser at it just to see what it did.
And you understand that if they're worried about what we call contamination, meaning you sent a rover to Mars that's kind of got microbes on it because they didn't sterilize it to the class, 4B level or whatever the technical term is, you might be concerned that you would contaminate all the underground water on Mars with Earth microbes, right? That's what they're claiming. Makes a great excuse for not looking at any of this stuff. But if you sampled the very bottom, because water flows downhill, water's not going to flow back uphill. It means you could sample that sand, that soil, whatever, where the flow terminates at the bottom. You could put it in the hoppers. You could give a chemical analysis. You could do Raman spectroscopy. You could do the organic analysis. If there are microbes in the water, you would find a lot of organics, given that the sensitivity of the instrument, the SAM instrument, which is to detect organics, can measure organics, we're told, down to the parts per billion level. And the fact that they've done none of this, and they got a mission, a billion-dollar mission called Curiosity, got to tell somebody that NASA's not telling us the truth about their mission.
They're not.
No, I want to call them out on this because, you know, there's only one ultimate reason for even going to Mars like this, and it's not for pretty pictures.
No.
It's because we want to go there. And so I want to call them out on the idea that this thing has to be sterilized to the nth degree, because those same microbes we are apparently okay with, and whatever could even still be on that craft that was sterilized is probably as safe as any hospital we've ever been in. Mm. So, you know, how much contamination could we actually do to the planet unless, dare I say, they didn't want to disturb someone else's terrain?
That's an interesting idea.
Because otherwise it'd be fine for us, right? I mean, if we contaminated with something minimal that would have come across on one of our spacecraft after people were wearing basically spacesuits to even build the damn thing, you know, like, is it really going to be damaging to us that we would create? Well, I guess there could be some kind of
interaction. Well, the problem is much more basic, which is if we were to inadvertently contaminate Mars with terrestrial organisms and we someday get labs sophisticated enough to actually look at DNA and all that, and we find there's no difference between organisms and organisms and organisms, then the question is going to be hanging out there, and they put it out there, so it's kind of politically now floating in the news media. If we find life on Mars, is it really life on Mars, or did we bring it? Meaning they close off the entire discussion by the ambiguity of, is it simply forward contamination, and we simply can't know.
Well, but what about the Mars rocks that we've found here?
The Schergetites and the others. In fact, there was, remember the big case a few years ago where the guys at Houston, and there were some other people on the team from Lockheed and other centers that claimed they'd found these little nanostructures in a Martian meteorite that had come from Mars. And there's this huge controversy to this day. Are those, you know, fossilized living organisms, or are they simply the product of some kind of geological process?
Mm.
See, as long as we can keep this debate in ambiguity, the public doesn't get interested, they don't get snagged, they don't get intrigued, they don't follow it, they don't care about it, they don't care about how much money is spent or not spent doing this, they're much more concerned with affairs on Earth, and they're in this endless loop where they're only concerned with affairs on Earth. And affairs on Earth these days are not going very well, in case you haven't noticed.
No, they are not.
Oh, my God. If you click on this image, guys, and you look at that square block on the right with the scoop out of it, that looks like a piece of a foundation.
I was going to tell you, that's the 90 degrees all around it.
Yes, and it's a block.
It's smashed, and it was hollow at one time. It looks like it it almost looks hollow.
So, and then the one right to the 1 o'clock position that's just going off screen that looks like it's square on the end, and then it tapers, and it's got flutes. That looks like it was chiseled or worked by some tool or something. See, it's so hard to tell the real stuff from the just natural stuff because this stuff is in such a state of degradation, of erosion, of being smashed and smashed and smashed again. It's a wonder we can see anything that's recognizable.
Not only that, you know, Mars had a Mother Nature prevalent all over it for a long time.
Yep,
so,
yep.
You know, We call it Uncle Jake's Junkyard over at the channel because it looks like Uncle Jake's got a little bit of everything for everyone.
Okay, well, look, time is flitting by. We spent a lot of time on this image, but this is a hell of an image to open up. Oh, I did it again, didn't I?
This is
a really amazing image because I had never seen, Will, until you pointed this out to me, this image with this water flow from this mission until tonight.
Okay, that was back at 712. So that's way back. We couldn't go look at that. But if you want to go to image 2 on the same page real quick, we won't spend too much.
So we get rid of this. We go back to what's up in the sky. We scroll down to image number 2. Oh, there's another one.
Another one. Now, this was from 1048. So we're only on...
See, now, when you're giving these numbers, you're giving people numbers in sols, which is the Martian day, which is equivalent to 24.66 hours. The Martian day is a little longer than an Earth day. So when you hear these numbers, 786, 741, we're not doing bingo behind the scenes here. We're actually giving the number of the Martian day in which the Curiosity took the picture.
Yeah, we couldn't go sample. That's so far away now they would never go sample the one back at Sol 700 day. But this one, if you want to open it up from NASA, this is if you want to open up the image 2 link from the NASA website, pull it up.
Yep.
And you can see it there again. Now, this wasn't too far back, so you'd have to think that I would be looking out for this. Now, like I said, I've brought it up time and time again, and not too much, not a word from NASA. So, and I think that this looks exactly like what they showed on the big scale,
The
little scale.
I saw a story, though, on CNET, which I was quoting from a couple of minutes ago, that they claim that if Curiosity found something like this, they could not go near it because of the Coast Bar conditions. Coast Bar is the, I forget what the acronym stands for, but it's basically the interplanetary protocol among nations on Earth with space programs that they will not go out willy-nilly and contaminate the planets before we can actually analyze them for life and DNA and stuff like that. So they're claiming now officially that even if Curiosity found something, they don't claim that they found it, they say if we found it, meaning they're already denying that they've got two pictures of something that they could have gone over to, they're claiming they can't sample it or look at it close up because it would be prohibitive in terms of the Coast Bar accords for forward contamination of biology from Earth to Mars. But you could stand off and shoot it with the laser, and you'd find out what's in the soil, and if it was organics, you'd see carbon signatures and nitrogen signatures and phosphorus and other stuff that don't belong in just sand, so you could infer the way they've inferred that there is water flows on Mars from these streaks, you could infer that there was something organic going on in the water flow, particularly if you pinged around it and you didn't get the same signature far away from where the flow is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So if you want to close that second image there, well, there's one more with it I want the listeners to see.
So we're back to what's up in the sky.
Yep, and then you hit that image 3.
Number 3. And, oh, yeah, look at this.
Top right-hand corner again. And this one, it doesn't seem – a lot of the times, I don't know what's above it, but it looks like a gully that it would come down. This just looks like it's coming out of a little spring there or something. Somehow it's either doing it at night. I wouldn't even begin to understand the process, but it's there, and you can also see it's off to the left and the right. It's been dried there again over – they could actually most likely test that. They're not going to turn the rover around to go test it, but this isn't too far back to go test.
But if you found one or two, if you found two, it means they're not rare.
They're everywhere.
It means you just they're everywhere. You just keep looking, and when you take your pans with mass cam, and you see something like this, you don't just drive by. I mean, this gives a whole new meaning to the term drive by.
Exactly. The video on the page that I had there, there's a video I did on this. I went off on one of those rants where I was just like, you know, come on. This is blatantly, you know, even if they're in what is the autonomous drive, which they weren't on those days because they took a lot of images, that's driving right by, pedal down to the metal, mm-hmm. you know. No curiosity. So I thought you'd enjoy those, and I thought the listeners would enjoy those before we even got into the anomalies. Because that, with it coming out this week, that was something I thought, you know, hey, I've been screaming about this for a while now, and I don't maybe now that we've got it a little bit more out there, we'll actually get some answers or see something, or maybe NASA they haven't seen it. Which I highly doubt.
You really think they haven't seen it? They have all this slave labor called grad students to pore over every pixel of every picture. Of course they've seen it.
And they most likely have they've probably passed it around, and it's definitely these are the only three.
By the way,
Alan?
Yeah.
On the NASA image, the full scale image that we click on when we click on Will's site and that image. Do you notice that funny shelf-like thing and the shadow on the slope below it?
Make sure I'm looking at the right picture. On the top left, there's a little bit of the wet spot coming down.
No, you have to go down. You see all those layers, those strata that are kind of sticking out helter-skelter?
I was on image number three.
Number three.
Yes.
You have to click on the whole image to get to the NASA version.
Okay.
Click on that.
Okay, I've got that.
All right. Now, do you see that outcrop sticking out with the little bright yellowish ball on the end of it?
Then
you look down at the shadow.
Yeah.
Rocks don't do that. They do not erode like that. If something that thin was eroded from a rock, it would fall off. There's no way it would stick out there and also be a different color. So we're looking at something that appears to be out of a different material than a rock.
I was looking at that big baseline there of the big major area underneath all those
underneath
like cardboard layers.
Underneath the whole stack, of Leon.
Yeah, and it so much looks like concrete. It's just silly.
It looks like a foundation. In fact, early on, right after the mission landed back in August of 2011, they took a picture or a panorama, and they were extolling the fact that they'd found flowing water in Gale Crater. But when you look closely at the picture, it looked actually like it was a concrete driveway. It looked like concrete.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not rock, not sandstone, not whatever. It looked like concrete. And again, it's hard to tell from just appearances. But you see, they have all the other instruments that they can know. They're not just telling us.
No, this has to be a really soft material. Otherwise, there was some serious, serious erosion happening. I mean, how do you get this strata like layering? You know, and secondly, I haven't.
Well, to me,
I'm not a big Mars guy, but on the top right, there's a little bit of a solar flare happening there, and I don't think that camera, you know what I'm saying? Do you see it up on the top right, that little ghost-like area?
Yeah.
It's like that's in the shadow zone in that photo, and I'm like, I was trying to line up where the sun was from that shadow down below,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, well, really?
It's like way overhead. You can see from the other shadows. It's almost like noon.
Yeah.
And this is a slope. But it looks like, I mean, the way I would look at this, those layers, that's not geology. That's collapsed structure that's pancaked down on the foundation base rock at the very bottom of the image.
Maybe that's even, if it's not artificial, maybe it's organic. Maybe it's layers of stuff like we see, like, what do they call that? The stuff that they extract for coal, for oil, it's those shales or whatever.
Oh, the shale.
Like layering, like layers and layers and layers of sediment of certain types.
See, this is very ambiguous. And what I try to do is I try to avoid putting out ambiguous images because, again, most people don't have the background. And they'll look at this and they'll say, what are those guys talking about? I just see rocks.
Right, right.
And from their point of view, they're right because they don't have the educated eye to look at an image like this and say, oh, that doesn't belong there, and oh, that's weird. And like, for instance, right on the top of your foundation rock at the base, Alan, you see that little lattice, that little dark right in the middle before you get to all the stacked stuff on top.
Right.
It's right at the interface between the big block on the bottom and the beginning of all the stacked stuff on top. There's like a little geometric thingy there in the middle measuring about a third of the picture in the center.
All right. I think I know what you're looking at.
Okay. See,
and there's do you see the two wet spots there, or the two darker sand colors?
Yeah, yeah.
Where is it in relation to that?
All right. You see your big block at the base of your stack, the one you said was like a foundation?
Right.
And there's actually another set of them below that.
Right.
They're all disconnected. And then then there's sand in between. Then you've got your foundation stone. At the very top of the foundation stone, right about one-third of the way in from the left of it where the shadow is, you can see what looks like geometry. Very linear with vertical crossbars, two of them. See that? Like something had been squashed. You know, have you ever seen earthquakes where buildings in the Far East or the Middle East where you have an earthquake and all these big structures pancake down to they're like 10 feet thick and they used to be a 100-foot building?
Hmm.
That's kind of what this looks like.
Add time to it, some sand and some – absolutely.
And a lot of wind erosion. In fact, on the top of the block below your foundation block, Alan, the one on the right – not the far right, which is in shadow, but the one that's kind of in sun, where you're looking at the top and then the bottom, and there's two little protuberances casting shadows out toward the 7 o'clock position.
Okay.
On the very top of that rock, or whatever it is, there appears to be geometry. In fact, I'll do my own trusty thing, which is I get out a magnifying glass and I simply look at it. We've all done this, right? Yep.
And for the people who are that don't see this stuff here, when we come back for the second hour, we're going to be taking a look at some pictures you're absolutely going to be able to see. So,
and on that cue, Will, you're getting really good at this. We're going to go to our next break. My guests this morning are Will Farrer and Alan Stern. We're discussing water flows and artifacts on Mars that for some reason NASA just ignores and ignores and ignores. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we'll be right back. Guests this morning, Will Farrer and Alan Sturm, and we're discussing artifacts and strange anomalies on Mars. Will, where do you want to take us next?
All right. We've got let's go and hit the anomalies. The number four, the latest anomalies from planet Mars.
So hang on. So we go back to Radio with Pictures.
And everybody go to othersideofmidnight.com, and then go ahead and make sure click on our banner there, and then number four.
And we are having a desert thunderstorm. Speaking of water in a desert,
lightning. We are having a very bad storm here in Maryland on this coast.
Oh my God, coming up from North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah, it's been one.
Even if Joaquin stays offshore, you're going to have... In fact, I heard it was a 1,000-year rain event for the East Coast.
Wow.
A 1,000-year event.
10 minutes from the water, so we're hoping that, hoping that it keeps pushing off. Everybody visualize it pushing off and getting away from the Americas.
Well, actually, there are two storm systems. There's the one that's giving you the rain, and there's Joaquin offshore, and the two aren't really affecting each other. You're just having an incredible rain event, the biggest in 1,000 years, I was told this afternoon. Okay, so we go to Radio Pictures, and we click on link number four, latest anomalies from Mars. right?
Yep.
Okay.
Wait.
It says error displaying page. Hmm.
Uh-oh.
That's not good.
Did it actually go down? Let's see.
I'm still alive.
Latest anomalies from the planet Mars. Let's see what
we get. I'm getting an error message.
Yeah, I'm getting one
now. Could not connect to MySQL. Hmm.
Yep. Look at you guys.
Your MySQL server went down.
You guys are getting so big. You guys can't handle it. Here's what we'll do.
We've broken another website?
I know, you guys. That's good. That's usually a good thing when
that,
you guys are...
That used to be a kind of a badge of honor when I was doing art show. We can bust a website. We know we've done something, but it doesn't help us to look at something. Hmm. Okay, look. We've got a whole bunch of images.
Which I put
in there, by the way, as a backup. That's why I want us to have images. Because our server and your server may have broken, but ours is still alive. So why don't we go directly to image number 7?
Sounds good.
Which is below the links.
And that was one of the ones we were going to pull up anyway. So let's go ahead and pull that up. If you can click on it or just look at it. This was a Molly shot. I like to
It's a what?
It's the Molly camera that took the shot.
The Molly camera.
Yeah,
Curiosity
yes.
has several different cameras. They all have acronyms. So if you say it quickly, no one's going to know what you're talking about.
It seems lately the mass cams, that where they stand on the rover, they're getting really dusty. The images are coming back really, really blurry. But this is kind of tucked away. It's on the rover's arm.
They don't have a dust cover on the mass cam, but they do have a dust cover on the Molly cam.
So and when this thing
every
comes
time
up,
they take a picture, then they put the cover back up so it doesn't get dusty.
See, we've gotten some crystal clear images right here. And this was one of the first ones I sent because of the block, the cornerstone block. My eyes go to the first one, and I had sent this one to Alan earlier. And we were looking at it. He had found some interesting things in it, too, as well. Hopefully the website will come up while we're I got my website guys working on it in the meantime.
Okay.
And we can start anywhere on here and look. If you want to start with the main image, right, the main center anomaly, that's what I had put on my picture. The little hole in it's not there. That is I've seen two images of the same, and that little dot there, that's just an artifact, an image artifact.
Or it's a burned pixel.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to make sure that was clear to everybody. Just so that
we're looking at the object with the vertical slot in it.
Exactly, and it's got a horizontal and a vertical on the front. It almost looks like a cornerstone to something that had a tool used on it at one time.
Yeah. See, most people looking at this, they wouldn't give it a second glance. It's so shattered, so destroyed. You got to have I'm intrigued with the one. If we start with this block with the vertical and the horizontal thingies with your red arrow.
Ooh.
Nice.
Woo.
The land of enchantment tonight is getting very interesting. If you lose me, you'll know why. Okay, if you go to the red arrow you have pointing at something else in the 2 o'clock position from your central block. You see the red arrow up there?
Oh yeah, to the stand. It kind of looks like an ingot or something.
Well, you've got a bunch of red arrows on here. You got 1, 2, 3, 4 red arrows. All right. The middle red arrow in the picture is pointing to this block, right?
That one. Yep.
If you go to the 2 o'clock position from the block, you come to another red arrow, right?
If you
go beyond the red arrow to the big rock behind it to the right. That looks very strange. It's like it's got a double scoop. It looks semi-symmetrical. It looks like it's a fragment. And then the one right next to it looks like another block. Remember, see the right angles on both sides?
Yeah, and it doesn't look like it came from that either.
No. It looks like it's been tossed there by whatever, cataclysm, meteor impact, earthquake, whatever. I mean, this has been shaken and baken a lot.
And that's what's that's where people, the destruction of it we see is just it's shattering. We talked a lot about that on the Pluto special, where you kind of some of these pictures you get, you know, whoa, they hit you at the heartstrings because of the total devastation. But
since we don't have a lot of time, let's move quickly to other images. So we go back. We've gotten this is a close up. So we click back one.
Click back one.
You know, now you're back at radio with pictures and image number 7. Let's go down to I like 8.
Let's hit 8.
This where did you find this?
My buddy Rami Barlan from one of our groups. He runs the exclusive Mars Images group in our group, in our umbrella group. He found this one, and I just fell in love with it too. The pyramidal shape of it, how it's got on the right side is beveled, and then on the small left side, wait till you when you see the center of that mass. Mm-hmm. It has a almost like an S that's curved off, like at the ends where it's just pointed.
So if we click on your image, it takes us to a bigger version of that image, and that pyramidal thing. What you have any idea of the scale of this? Because this appears to be quite a distance away and pretty big.
Mm-hmm. It is, I think so. When we try to do a scale of it, it seemed to be at least off in the distance, 30, 40, 50 feet.
Okay.
So you're thinking four. Well, I will kind of put it up. Maybe the size of a normal. Let's see. What pyramid can we put it here? I hate putting stuff to Earth terms, but I'd say maybe some of the smaller pyramids out in Egypt. That's what Rami and I thought it could be.
You mean the little tiny pyramids around the Great Pyramid there on the plateau?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think those were built. The mythos is that those were built to Khufu's wives. I don't buy the mythos, but that's how they're identified. You're saying that this is roughly the scale of one of those little ones?
That's what we had thought. That's what I thought. But with Curiosity Images, it's very hard because
Do you see the pillars on the right-hand side down in the center of the image?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look at those. Those vertical pillars. It looks like an Egyptian doorway.
Absolutely. And it's got – even has the – it's in pretty decent shape.
Yeah.
The roof part that goes over top of it
yep.
on the pillars is still in good shape. In the middle of the actual piece itself, the pyramid, it's got these lines coming down it that look spiraled on some of them. There's one big long one, and then there's two just in the other side of it that come down with it. It's a beautiful shot. I thought this was
It looks like, in terms of the big pyramidal-shaped object, it looks like there used to be a covering. The covering may still be present on the right half of it, but it appears to have been stripped on the left half, and you see these slanted lines going down from the apex down, parallel lines with shadows in between. That looks like structure that is basically holding this thing up.
Yeah, I never noticed that.
Mm.
Yeah,
speaking of the apex, that square up
it's
at the
flat.
Top. That,
it's a flat top. Yes.
That it's like a cube, but it's like up there, and then you have this like almost like water slide treatment coming down the right.
Mm-hmm. Except I don't think it's water erosion. I think it's structural. I think it's architectural. Alan, come on, your architectural eye.
and that oddball shape on the left that's a similar like looking like a like one of those pyramids that have slumped down, the ones that weren't the regular pyramids of the exacting angles.
I wish we could see the wide angle. Was this a mass cam, Will?
This was a mass cam.
It has
cam
to be
shot.
Because it's got too much. What's the full shot?
I'd like to see that.
The context. See, another thing for everybody in the audience to know is it's not just enough to look at an artifact or an anomaly or a weird piece of geometry on the landscape. You got to get the wide-angle image, if there is one, so you get the context for the anomaly or the geometry you're seeing.
Here we go. My website's back up. Let's try it. Well, let's try and go there because I've got it there.
Okay.
If you go back to the other side of midnight, let's see if you guys could take me out again. And then go to number 4.
Link number 4 at the top right under Radio with Pictures. Clicking on number 4. Come on, number 4. Sound like in Vegas. There we are.
All right. You go about
Your web guys are good.
You guys got about 600 people on the site right now just pulling it. So if you can scroll all the way down the image.
What's the number?
This is pretty 16,
all the way down to 16. Scrolling,
and you know what?
Scrolling.
This may be bigger than I thought because it is up on this hill.
Oh, I forgot
about this.
Oh, that's fantastic. 16. And look at that. You even have the backgrounds out of focus. See up there over the ridgeline on the left?
Okay, what I want to do now is I want to click on 16.
No, you
click
want to
on
yeah,
NASA.
The link.
The link to NASA.
The red link above.
Oh, okay. Hang on. Let me go back. Okay, red link. Good, it's a hot link. Oh, yes, it's huge. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a pyramid. I mean, pyramid scale. I shouldn't say it's a pyramid. We don't know. We don't have ground truth. Let's be scientific about this. But, yeah, that's a fair distance from the rover. That's got to be a pretty fair-sized small pyramid. Pyramid-shaped object. And if you click on it, yep, okay. And the stuff on the left in the background, that's up on Mount Sharp itself. That's miles away. But this is probably several hundred feet from the rover.
I'm surprised they're using an aperture that would cause anything miles away to be out of focus. That means that this is actually
a lot
closer.
No, that's not out of focus. It's dust. It's the stuff in the atmosphere.
Oh.
See, it's haze.
See, I'm in Mars 101 here. So.
Yeah. Well, Mars is an atmosphere. Mars is not the moon. The moon, the analysis is a lot simpler because there's nothing between you and the objects. Whereas
I like
when you're,
the moon.
When you're, yeah, because it's simpler, Alan. Come on. Now, if you look, gentlemen, at the NASA picture, look right in the center at the top of the ridge. Do you see those nice, dark, horizontal lines, the shadows, and the verticals? Mm-hmm. That looks like some kind of, I don't know,
platform.
Well, windowing or platforms, or in other words, it's got three layers. They're contiguous. They're horizontal to each other, and then there's a vertical on the left that looks like a remnant of something that might have been constructed.
Mm-hmm. Hey, how about dead center on the top of the ridgeline there, the vessel looking shape.
Yeah,
and there's a round. There's a round edge with a beveled edge around the outside of that.
That's look to the left of that. Just below the level of the ridge, there's more. Yeah. There's more square geometry, like two layers of a square,
right. That's
sitting, looking to the upper right. It's like facing where the sun is coming from, which is coming from the upper right. But yeah, that pyramid thing on the far right now, and it's got different tonal textures. You can see that part of the covering is still there, and part of the covering is missing. It's got those lines, and rocks don't do that. There's no way that's a rock because rocks don't do that. And the one next to it...
Well, you would figure that you would see a lot of rock like that. You know, like we can find those octagonal shaped rocks at where volcanic rock was being pushed up, you know, and like the side strips of the Devil's Tower and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But we don't see, you know, we have these interesting singular objects amongst a lot of other common looking erosion, you know, and that's what really makes those things stand out is like, well, why is that sitting there?
Now, it's probably difficult to get to this thing because, look, you've got a huge ridge of rocks between you and the rover, so there's an explanation for why they didn't drive over.
Yeah.
But still, why don't they, you know, I mean, you might, if that's farther away than 20 meters, they can't ping it with the laser because they don't have enough intensity. So you would then think, okay, we're looking at satellite imagery, right, from high rise, from the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter spacecraft. And you'd think if you're seeing a pyramid on Mars with internal structure and part of the covering is gone and part of the covering is still there, you'd look at the satellite imagery, particularly if you have two of them side by side, and you'd say, okay, how can we drive up there? And you'd plot a course because you've got aerial maps that may take you a week or two, but you'd go there if you were serious about looking at what Mars really is trying to tell you, but instead they drove by.
Yeah, they kept going.
They probably have agendas.
Probably.
I mean, you know, just basic science agendas, and I would question whether. Okay, no, I agree with you. They should have stopped.
Image 16 shows it really well. Well, you've done a really good job of amplifying, enhancing without introducing spurious artifacts or noise. That's a damn good image.
I love that one. My buddy Armie did a great job.
It looks like it could be in the Valley of the Kings.
It really does. And right, both of them, the side by side.
And then the stuff below the hill, because you're looking at this pyramid over the hill. We don't know how far away over the hill it is. Probably not very far, maybe a few hundred feet. But then you've got that, you know, colonnades on the right, and then you've got linear features. Again, it's the geometry, the straight line geometry, orthogonal, meaning it's at right angles, that calls your attention that this ain't just rocks.
Something had to, the wind and the rain didn't form these.
Where are we going next?
All right. Let's go ahead and close the, if you're still got the NASA image, let's go ahead and close that. How about an oldie but a goodie? Image 15. Since we haven't gone on some of these other rovers, I'm not sure if you've seen this one before.
No.
This is, if you open it up, if you click the actual image, I got the website set up for tonight. So if you actually click the image, you'll get a bigger version of the image.
Right.
If you click image where it says NASA, you'll get the NASA original image.
Red link. Right above.
Yeah, the red link right above it. So if you want to click the actual link here, this has been called by many people. I didn't find this one. The procession. If you take a ruler, or if you take, you can do this right here on your screen. These are whatever these are. They're equally spaced out, eight of them. This is on the rim.
You know what it looks like? I mean, with this lower resolution, the fact that they're kind of black against the desert. It looks like a convoy of trucks in World War II in Rommel's army in the northern deserts of Africa.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been claiming that. It looks like a convoy.
A convoy. A big old half-tracks. You know, the kind with the canvas top, and the Germans are all sitting in there with their helmets and their rifles, and they pull up and they all jump out, you know. We're letting our imagination get a little bit out of hand.
A little bit out of it. A little speculation.
But that kind of regularity, again, look for geometry. Look for regularity. Look for things that nature doesn't provide us. That's a keeper. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool one. And if you want to...
And this was from Curiosity? No, it can't be.
No, if you go ahead, and I think this was Opportunity. If you go ahead and click on the image 15, where the red part, you can actually see most of it is right on the edge of that crater there. Yep, Let me see here. I think it's Opportunity.
It would have to be Opportunity.
Yeah, it made it to this far in to the Sols.
Which is like on the other side of the planet from where Curiosity is at the moment.
Yeah, so what's amazing is we've got two rovers going, but they're both finding strange things on totally opposite sides of the planet. So.
Not strange to me.
No,
I mean,
it's
I came
not
to the conclusion
to
decades ago that Mars is covered with artifacts.
And you know, we're just being able to find, you've kind of passed the torch to a lot of us who have just, like I said, the guys over at our groups love you, man, because they if it wasn't for you out there making videos, we share your videos all the time, the old stuff, because it's today we're finding the stuff that you looked at. So let's go back to my page here on the number 4 link here. Let's go up. How about image number 10? That's a new one that's just fresh off the rover.
Going to number – oh, yes. Oh, this is so cool. Now tell me that's nature. Come on. I dare you to tell me that's nature.
When I made the video, if you guys check out my website, my website's free to sign up for. Even in front of the block, there's the blocky feature that sand's been built up on. Look at the right side of that. It's got 90 degree angles that are rounded off, and looks like there's little spears and stuff in it.
This looks like something that Zahi would have found somewhere off the Giza Plateau, maybe over where the Old Kingdom tombs were cut, the so-called rock-cut tombs. If you didn't tell me that this image was on Mars, I would say it was somewhere in Egypt.
I was just going to say, if I asked an archaeologist, I wonder what they'd say.
Well, you should do that. You should do a double-blind. Remember when John West did that with the Sphinx, when he was looking at the potential for water erosion on the Sphinx? And what he did is, I mean, you may not know the story, John Anthony West is an armchair archaeologist, an old friend of mine, wrote a book, a brilliant book called Serpent in the Sky, which is the real ancient history of Egypt. I recommend it to everybody. He went into an Oxford geology professor one day with a picture of the Sphinx, and he wanted to prove that the Sphinx had been eroded by water based on what he had seen and what Dr. Schock had basically corroborated. This is the geologist that John convinced to go over and take a look, really a close look at the Sphinx, at the potential for water erosion. So what John did is he took the picture of the Sphinx and he put a piece of paper with tape over the body of the Sphinx just with the head sticking up. The other way around. He covered the head so you could only see the body. You couldn't see the head, so you couldn't see it was the Sphinx. And he said, showed this picture to this geologist. He says, what kind of erosion is that? The guy took one look. Oh, that's water. That's a lot of water. Then John takes the paper off the head. The geologist recognizes the Sphinx. He blanches white. And he says, I have a meeting coming right up now. I'm afraid you'll have to leave. He would not confront the idea there had been massive water erosion on the Sphinx because that's not standard geological assessment of the Egyptian desert in terms of when the Sphinx was carved.
And you don't want to, and there, that's where I think we face a lot of people. They went to school, all their time has been spent into these theories. And if they're proven wrong, that's amazing. That's a very great, very good idea, Richard. And we might have to make that happen.
Now, Alan, if you look over on the left side of the block, you know, kind of to the left of that sand dune, which is gently duning up in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
You see that black thing with the shadow?
Yep.
Okay, now.
Sheet metal?
That looks like sheet metal.
Sheet metal?
That looks like, you know, when you drive in New York, and I haven't driven in New York for a while, when you drive in New York, you know, you'll be driving along and suddenly this will go clunk, 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 clunk. And you'll realize that you've driven over a section of you know, like First Street or Madison Avenue or whatever, where they put these big steel plates down temporarily to cover the excavation going underneath for telephone or sewer or whatever. That's what this looks like. It looks like a piece of steel plating that's sticking out from under the block. Doesn't it?
Yeah. And you know what else is interesting is on the right side of this big block, I was just looking at see where it looks like it's carved out, and we've got this almost perfectly vertical shadow line coming up the center, right, in the 90-degree angle.
On the block itself.
Yeah, and on the interior, right, we've got one color that looks almost like that, like the spray foam that you, like, it comes in a can and you can squirt it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side is another nice, clean surface, you know, with just a little bit of debris, like a little bit of debris up in the top area. But it looks like these two areas might have been like fused together, or if this was concrete, that would have been like two different pour times where they didn't quite gel together.
Or you're looking at two blocks that have been sundered so that what that used to be cemented together, you're now seeing them pulled apart.
Yeah. And I'm finding that very interesting, and I'm also finding very interesting that shadow line is so perfectly straight, and there is a splice line just to the left of that shadow that goes straight up and down where they've merged these photos together.
Yes, I can see that.
Yeah, that's very interesting
too.
Now,
look on the upper far right, above the block on the far right. Do you see those interesting angles, those straight lines with the shadow and the dunes below, but the whatever it is causing the shadows as a bunch of straight lines.
Wait, are you looking at the crop, or are you looking at the full photo from NASA?
I'm looking at the full photo from NASA. I think I'm looking at the full photo. Let me go back.
The angular block.
Oh, no. I was looking at the Will's enlargement. So if I go up to the NASA image, all right, and you got to go right to the bottom right to see this thing. That's where the block is, kind of center of the image on the right-hand side, about halfway down.
Uh-huh.
It's better to see it on Will's version. So let's go back to Will's page, and either the version he has on the page, or you can click on it to make it full scale. See the block.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the 11 o'clock position up near the top of the frame.
Yes.
Oh, wow. See all those linear thingies with the shadow? That looks more like sheet metal. that's just kind of crumpled there. And then there's a, if you go just to the right of that, there's this linear, looks almost like a tree root, except it's bigger than a tree root. You see that little cylindrical?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting, isn't it? Because that would require, if this was nature, that would require a highly diverse collection of rock material there, where the erosion managed to pull that away enough that the other stuff stayed. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, okay.
Where to next? Because we're running out of time. We're almost at the bottom of the hour. In fact, we are at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, we are at the bottom of an hour.
So we will be back. You're on the other side of midnight. Oh, okay. I'm being told in my ear that we're not ready for a break, so we won't do a break.
Okay. I want to go to this image 9. I think this is pretty fascinating.
Okay,
because talking about water on Mars, we should also be looking for life on Mars, like biological life.
Okay, what is number 9?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
This is a fresh image directly from the rover. This just came off of it.
And which rover?
We're looking at off of Curiosity.
Curiosity. Okay, I see mass cam, M cam. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Now you see this is the one with the little guy looking thing there.
It looks. Have you ever seen the Travelocity gnome?
Yeah.
It looks like the Travelocity gnome. He's gone to Mars.
It also looks like an Ewok.
True. Maybe it's
classic pareidolia.
Maybe it's a relative of an Ewok. All right. Yeah, I would say it's not really a living thing. I'd say it's very complex geometry because look, you see the stair step right angles right to the right of the face of the gnome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See that? It's the same width. It's like it's a wall, and it comes down. Goes left, comes down, goes left, comes down. So it's like a stair step linear feature that has the same width all the way down, despite the fact that it turns sharp angles many times.
Many times, yeah.
That is not natural. Nature does not do that.
I'm going to take a much closer look at this one. You should click on the full-size image from NASA. This is quite impressive. You were mentioning foundations, and there's an area where it looks like the softer material has come down, and larger, flatter rocks that happen to be up above have collapsed and are sliding down.
See that. Yep.
No, I'm thinking, how did you get a more solid object? And I'm not a geologist, but I mean that looks pretty odd. That it looks more like a collapsed surface.
It looks like a foundation, a collapsing foundation built out of individual blocks. By the way, because there's not much holding it together. And look at the sharp right angle on the far right side of it.
Yeah,
look at that.
Yeah, there's like crazy.
I tore that apart. After the show, if people want to check out the page a little bit, the video on the front page, you'll see this is one of my latest videos. It comes when you blow this up. It's got a grid in it.
I'm looking at it in Photoshop right now. Why are they doing grids now?
Okay, this is coming from the camera. This is a special filter in the mass cam images, which is how they're giving us full color. Mm-hmm. So they put red, green, and blue behind sequential images, and the dots, which are part of an algorithm that you can get rid of if you go to the original data wheel. So this is like an intermediate step, and it's been so long since I looked at this that I've kind of forgotten. But this is like a raw black and white version that's going to turn into color if you put two more images with it.
Oh.
Exactly. And I'm sure, hopefully, in the future, they will put it as a color image there. They've done that in the future. But what I've done is basically given a little bit of Gaussian blur, just kind of blurred it out, and then just sharpened it up a little bit. But the little where the garden gnome is, all those blocks falling down that hill, and the remnants in the direct center of the image to the right, it's a perfect 90-degree angle. On the edge of it, it almost looks like, something, the house on the hill that overlooked.
Doesn't it? Where I live here in the Land of Enchantment tonight, and by the way, you'll notice the thunderstorm moved away, luckily, there is an old structure up on the top of the hill about 300 or 400 feet away from the house that looks exactly like this. Exactly. It, like, there was something was built, and they obviously ran out of money, and they only could do the foundation. And it was so long ago, the foundation is now crumbling so that it's kind of sloping down. And it looks very similar to this, except we know, because I've been up there looking for trash, we know it's man-made. It's not a natural outcrop.
Mm.
You've dug through it and actually can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see down in the bottom right-hand corner, there's a block that's that just below where that the right-hand corner of the mm-hmm. thing is. It's got it's I'd say directly under it. There's an actual triangle in the middle of the block. It's I'd love to know how that was formed. I don't know if you guys can see that or not.
Okay, now to be fair, you can get that from what's called mudstone, where you have layers of very fine silt, and it solidifies in layers in sedimentary layers, and then you get turns into rock, and then many millions of years later, it's you know, eroded on the surface, and you get fractions of the old surface and a fraction of the upper layer. So that, to me, would not be an automatic indicator of intelligence, but it is. That thing sitting on the top of that whole area looks like it's been flattened out for a foundation.
Oh, yeah. You can see the flat marks over there on the right side
of it.
As it goes. And I love to see what's to the right of it. It just kind of goes straight off to it. And even in the distance on the video I do seems to have those features over there across the way. They're really hard to see in a NASA image, have these geometry and stuff to it. It's almost like that's just part of the debris that's been falling down the hill.
Okay, we are rapidly running out of time, because remember, in the third hour tonight, we have Andy Weir, the author mm-hmm. of The Martian. And I haven't had time to go see it. Nobody I know has had time to go see it. Did you guys have time?
I pre-screened it last night.
Okay.
We had a pre-screening.
Okay.
Oh,
don't tell us anything. Is it worth going to see?
Absolutely.
Okay,
and it's worth it.
That's all we need to know.
3D. See it in 3D. If you can, see it in 3D.
3D. Okay. So I want to go back to Radio with Pictures, because we're coming up on the third hour. We're doing a third hour tonight, folks. So stay tuned. My interview with Andy Weir, which, you know, in honesty and broadcasting, I had to pre-tape because Andy said, "What? You're on what time?" So we kind of pre-taped it. And so what I want to do is I want to scroll up on Radio with Pictures. I actually want to scroll down. Scroll down to image number 10. This is one that I submitted tonight.
All right.
Under Radio with Pictures, image number 10.
Mm. Ooh, you know what? I've got a good video on this one, too.
Ever seen a rock that looked like...
I love it.
Yeah, this is obviously some Martian's pink motorcycle.
I love it.
Hell's Angels on Mars.
Pinkies.
I mean, have you ever seen rocks that take on the geometry and the color? I mean, you've got metallic. You've got obviously something that's sculpted that's pink, painted pink, or pink embedded pigment in it. And then look at the rock to the right and look to the desert to the left. It's so out of place. It does not belong there, yet there it is. Mm. You tell me geologically how that thing got there.
Yeah, it looks like a motor, like a cylinder from a motorcycle.
Yeah, it looks like an old Martian Harley.
in the full NASA crop, this thing is actually hanging like at the bottom of the hill too. There is like no reason this thing should be there at all, unless it just hit it at a high velocity and just stuck there.
It's definitely beautiful. If it's made of metal or plastics or something that's kind of hard, and it was entombed in soft sedimentary muds, and then the muds eroded away and revealed this as an ancient piece of technology. Because a lot of erosion has gone on in our model, 65 million years of erosion since these guys actually hung out there and lived there. So let's scroll on down to number 11. This I find really cool. The
that
object on
cool.
the right is a little pyramid that was found by Curiosity, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago. I don't remember what Saul. The object on the left was photographed on the surface of the moon by the Chinese Chang-3 rover in Mare Imbrium, and they're to the same scale.
and they look the exact same. This was just before. This was in the big panorama, the one on the left moon.
Yep.
This was right before the rover conked out
yep,
and stopped
yep,
sending
yep.
stuff back.
Now, do you know what they both look like to me? And I'm going to be very bold, and I'm going to state what I think they are. I think they're Cairns. You know what a Cairn is?
I sent you a picture. We were just talking about this. Yes, the piles.
Mm-hmm.
The piles of rocks.
Cairns are rocks or a structure that's piled up from natural materials to basically be a marker, a surface marker, a geodetic marker, or a marker of a cache of information for someone that comes after to find. Now, look at the one on the right. I don't know whether... Rich is really good. Rich Rowland has been right on the top of his game tonight. If you click on that image, the comparison, then look at the right-hand Martian version. Look at that weird thing to the right of the Cairn Pyramid, peeking out from behind it. Doesn't that look like it's mechanical?
It really does.
It's some kind of mangled piece of machinery.
There's a lot of
Alan's giggling.
I'm giggling because
Sturm
I'll
show is you. Giggling.
I'll show you a machine that I haven't shown anybody yet.
Okay,
but it's not on Mars.
Oh, it's not on Mars. Okay, so let's go back. All right, back to Radio with Pictures. Scroll down now. Now this is kind of a trick question. Number 12 is a comparison, and you might want to click on it so you get the full scale image. Is a comparison between an image taken on Mars and an image taken on the Earth of a destroyed piece of wreckage from an airplane crash.
Oh, see?
Now,
I'm glad you're
which
that.
Is which?
Can I do it? Do you want me to do it, or do you want to take a shot at it?
Well,
think I know.
Each one suggests what you think it is, and then I'll tell you what the answer is, okay?
I think the left is Mars, and I think the right's going to be the airplane. I think that the left is what we've been finding all throughout.
Alan, so, what do you think?
I'm going to guess the left is the airplane only because of all the oxidation on what appears to be metal, but in the right, I'm that pinkish soil, but then there's that metal looking clip thing in the bottom left of that right hand picture
mm-hmm.
or mid bottom left that makes me think that it's, Earth, but yeah,
this isn't easy, is it?
No, it's a tough call. I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with left is Earth.
Okay. You're wrong.
Yeah. I figured
Will
so.
Is right. Left is Mars. The right one is Earth. And they look basically the same.
They really do.
So you've got twisted metal on Mars. And if I didn't tell you which picture was which, you couldn't figure it out.
No.
And nobody in the audience can figure it out. Because there's metallic manufactured stuff on Mars, folks. Big news. There's not just water. There used to be an ancient global civilization, and they left a lot of stuff.
Picture 13 is what you caught me off guard. I was like stealing away looking at that.
Oh, come on now. You don't skip ahead.
Oh, right. I couldn't help it because okay. I wanted to relate to, since I'm a photographer and I've spent a lot of time out and about photographing, you know, the other two nouns, places, things, and I've seen a lot of paid, worn out metal like this mm-hmm. around weathered areas, like around rivers and whatnot. And I couldn't help but keep looking at that, thinking, man, I have seen stuff like that before. And I'm trying to rack my brain
okay.
as to finding the pictures.
If you click on 13, it takes you to the biggest version of the image, a little bit bigger. Notice that you see a spring. See the spring there?
Yep.
All right.
Right of center.
You see the brackets at the bottom and the layers of the metallic, and then you see the there's a double curve of sheet metal.
Yeah.
Two lying side by side, or it's actually sticking up, and then I've enhanced the dark side so you can actually see into the shadow that there's a hole eroded in this plate-like metallic stuff, again, because of just corrosion. And
yeah,
then if you look to the right, you'll see that linear, like, rod extending up toward the top of the frame?
Yeah.
Right, up near the top?
Well, it starts at, like, think 3 o'clock over from the top of the of this curved metal.
Mm-hmm.
And it extends up into that bank.
Right,
through the...
See? And mm-hmm. then you've got on the left-hand side of this metal sticking up, which is blue, that bluish metal. If you go to the left, just by what, maybe one quarter of the width of the image, there's more sheet metal lying flat.
Yeah, those little like dome-like kind of flat pieces up there.
Except they're flat. They're tilted away and they're see the shadows. You can see the
Like a curve across the top of the flat bottom.
Right. Like it was metal. It was like, torn in some tremendous wrenching and catastrophe.
And given the light angle, bisecting right behind the vertical sheet metal looking stuff, it looks like it extends beyond. Like that whole piece is – there's a second piece that's right behind it.
Yeah, I wanted to give us the full image, and I tried, and it's 64 megs. So Yahoo said, "Are you nuts?" They wouldn't let me send it, so I have to think of another way to put up the full image. But the context shot – remember, context is very important. This is part of a whole ruin. The Curiosity, again, rolled right past that the mainstream NASA people said – get this – they said was upwelling of mineralized springs.
Hmm. It looks like airplane fuselage to me.
Yeah, it does. It looks like a piece of something much more complex with that spring at the bottom. Actually, I think these are three tanks as part of this ruin. And this, by the way, I don't think is as old as the most ancient stuff on Mars. This appears, when you see the context shot, and I wish I'd had time to put up the actual NASA imagery for the context. Let's see, if I go to Photoshop and I click on the image, I might be able to get the PIA number. So that
you
people
just give that out.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So you guys talk among yourselves while I do this.
Yeah, you know what looks fishy on this too is down there. So that slope, that center line is coming down, and it's S curving back out, and it hits that horizontal plane, which looks like another two pieces of thin materials smashed together, and then that S curve continues down and slopes out, just like airplane the supports inside the fuselage and stuff like that. I've seen this stuff close up. I mean, it looks totally like airplane stuff.
Well, it looks like manufactured stuff that's been put together by pieces. In other words, you bolt pieces together. It's not monocoque. It's not 3D, 3D planoforming or something. Mm. It's separate pieces, and they're put together as a bigger piece of something.
Yeah. And just for the record, I am the last person to claim that that's a piece of aircraft material. But that's what it
for
looks
the
like.
Audience, we have to remind them that when we see something and we say it looks like. We're not saying that's what it is. It looks like something we're familiar with.
Yeah. I see what I see. You see what you see. That's just kind of you gotta put it into your perspective. That does look like it. Looked like the little windows could have popped off at the top there. If you really want to start speculating where those it looked like boogie board parts were. The I love to see the PIA image on this one. And Richard, I noticed too that. It seems to be – there's some really old remnants on here, but there's also seems to be some newer – just not on this picture, but on Mars in general when we're looking at the anomalies. Some of it seems to be newer. Some of it has much fresher cuts, doesn't look like it.
Well, see, this is why I want to show you the full image. And I'm doing something.
Hey, speaking of, for us new guys on Mars, a PIA image, where do we go to find that?
Hang on. We'll get there in a second. I'm just about to get this image, and I'll give you the PIA number.
So, you would just put it right into Google and then search PIA and then
just
number.
You just put the number, and it'll take you right to the JPL website that has the image.
Nice. Right?
It's the planetary database. You'll find
Okay. It's the full-scale image of these ruins, including this stuff, plus a lot of other very mechanical-looking stuff, is PIA-19161. PIA-19161. Everybody out there looking frantically on the web following Other Side of Midnight, PIA-19161. And you'll see structures on the ground that NASA's claiming are mineralization deposits from upwelling hot water. Seriously, that's what they're claiming you're looking at.
I find it fascinating that never mind, I'm not even going to mention Wikipedia to you.
You know now why we always think of NASA as never a straight answer? NASA, never a straight answer? Because they are not giving us straight answers. Now, they're giving us straight images, but they're still by omission, lying about what they really are, or when they come out with a press release, it's complete deflection. Because this image, PIA19161, you can spend a week on that image. It's a mosaic of I think it's Mali Images, which is the microscopic color camera they've got on the arm. And they put them together, you know, like one image, second image, third image, and they mosaic them all together. And you've got incredible resolution. This is the one that's got, this version.
Oh, I've got a total different take on this now, yeah.
Okay. What I think it is, if you look at the really big panorama, and the big panorama is called, if I can get it up here.
Mars Curiosity Rover Garden City Area.
Yes, that's where it was. And it's basically in a valley that they were trundling up with Curiosity toward the apex of Mount Sharp. And this valley appears to be where a previous expedition guys from a prior high-tech terrestrial civilization went to Mars, built this stuff a long time ago, 30, 50, 100,000 years ago, who knows, and then it's now eroded. And all that's left is this mechanical stuff, but the mechanical stuff is in much better condition than the ancient stuff we're looking at. So that's why I think we might be looking at a more recent era of human high-tech exploration that went to Mars, are doing everything we're doing now, except they did it 100,000 years ago, and of course they're gone. Because the Earth history is filled with epics of high civilization. And I have Michael Cremo coming on, I think, next week to talk about this. That have been totally bypassed by history, by archaeologists, by paleontologists, by textbook writers, by academia, because we're not supposed to know we're not the first. Remember the old Victorian model, unending progress from, you know, stone knives and bearskins to, you know, 747s. Not.
It's amazing image.
Bizarre. I'm looking up there at the top, you know, the big main, like, foundation lines, let's call them, those, and I know the scale's kind of small, but it's interesting that all those little rocks of the same size are all in the same area in a wet spot, and right on the outside is, you know, rather dry, and I'm not saying that that's wet, because I don't know, but it's certainly, I don't know why all that discolored sediment would stick out, would stay right there.
But now, which image are you looking at?
The full size of the Garden City area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and up at the top there's like the foundation line up above your the thing you found, which was
it's lying in the valley. It's lying in this little canyon.
Just sitting there.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you know what? My bad. It's top left of the main composite image.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's like there's an area that just has all these little bitty rocks of similar size, all in a shape, like all bound by an area.
So, are you looking at PIA19161?
Oh, maybe not.
I think so. I think so. Up in the top right, he's talking about the little rocks that are just up.
It's, yeah, I'm looking at that. Yeah. I'm looking at top left. So, okay. This is the figure 1.jpg.
Yeah, it says, figure
it's
one.
Got the centimeters thing in the middle.
Yep, it's got the centimeter.
I think anytime they give centimeters, I think anytime they give the scale on these, I think they're all, I think they're lying. It's the only time they ever give us the scale, and I'm saying that just as someone who's done it, it seems like the scale's off from what we can find in our group. So that tips me off that they're hiding something to begin with.
Okay, do you see on the right, do you see where the scale says 0, 5, 10, 15 centimeters all the way to 30? Okay, if you go right below the 30, drop down, and there's your shard of metal.
Yeah,
and it is.
And you see it's sitting in a bowl-like surround with three walls, like a curved triangle, and it appears to be fragments of something that was much bigger, and we're only looking at the base foundations, and they're claiming this is all upwelling of mineralized materials from underneath.
Yeah, that's
absolute flat-out lie. Unless they're really dumb. Are we paying people billions and billions of dollars to be really, really dumb?
And how did they come up with this? That we're still learning things here on Earth for years. We study things for years and years and test and retest. They come up with these explanations within minutes, sometimes days, of these things coming out.
When I was covering JPL, we go to the morning press conferences. They would, you know, you send a mission to Mars, and they take a whole bunch of pictures. And then every morning at 9 o'clock, they'd call all the press into the Von Karman Auditorium, and we'd sit there when they gave us like an hour presentation with a few images. They literally only had like 2 or 3 hours with no sleep to look at the images. And then they would come out and they'd project them up on the big screen in the front of the auditorium. And they'd confidently say, this is this, and this is a that, and this is a such and such. And it's like, wait a minute, guys. You've had literally hours to look at this on another planet. How the hell do you know that's what that is?
Speculating just as much as when I pull up an image and say something looks like a rat or, mm-hmm. or something. It's mm-hmm. just as much speculation as some of what we do.
Doesn't this region, particularly if you're looking at PIA 19161, the one with the scale on it, doesn't it look like eroded foundations of some kind of structures?
Yeah. Hey, so top left, from the word centimeters, mm-hmm. About 11:30. Okay. You'll see a southwest to northeast bright line,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And where that intersects with the one coming from northwest down the southeast, follow that up right there. It looks almost like a square tubular shape that has been eroded and has been broken off.
Oh, that's strange. I see that.
Yeah, and then directly to the right of it, there's this little like shard sticking up
that's
casting its own little shadow, and then just up above that.
And
the
shard has three bumps on it, right? The shadow has three extensions to the left.
Farther to the left. I mean, farther to the right. Hop over the white line.
Oh, I'm looking at the one that's sticking straight up with the shadow, and then
I saw that.
You see that kind of quasi rectilinear area that vertical fin thingy with the shadows is sitting in. If you look directly below that, there appears to be more sheet metal lying flat. Yeah. It's white. It's whitish. It's uniform thickness. It appears to be very, very thin, but uniform.
Very on.
On. Totally on. Okay, guys, we've got 2 minutes left in the show. We have 2 minutes left in our portion of the show because Andy Weir is coming up. And I asked him some very probing, I hope, questions, and he gave me some very intriguing answers. Yesterday was the day that The Martian debuted all over, you know, big premiere, coast to coast, and all, several thousand theaters. If you haven't gone to see The Martian, by all means do. But as you're watching the movie, if you don't see anything that we've talked about tonight and shown you tonight in the movie, don't be too disappointed. Because it came with an incredible amount of NASA oversight. And unless Ridley Scott was really, really clever, unlike De Palma, and he snuck an Easter egg or two in for those of us to know what we're seeing, you may not notice it the first time. You may have to go back second time, third time to see the movie. And, of course, if we do see something, we'll come back and we'll tell you, because I think it's steamboat time. As Mark Twain said, when it's steamboat time, you steam. I think it's time that NASA is focusing our attention on going to Mars. And the only thing missing is the real reason to go to Mars, which is in the last 2 hours of what we've been showing you. That's why we should go to Mars. No other reason.
It's time.
It is time. It is more than time. It is time and then time. Well, gentlemen, our portion of tonight's show is over. I want to thank my guests this morning, Will Farrer and Alan Sturm. And we have been basically exploring the planet in a way that you may or may not see in the movie. But just wait, there'll be another movie to come. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return with my guest, Andrew Weir. And until I see you beyond the edge on the other side of midnight, we will see you on Tuesday morning next week. Enjoy the next hour.